Well, good afternoon, everyone. Mr. Hadley gave me a gift today. It's rules of civility that George Washington had written. So I'm not sure what he's trying to say to me, but I'm going to read it and find out. Hope it's all good. I think he mentioned the announcements. I'm not sure what he meant with that. Well, today I'd like to talk to you about goal setting. And yes, I know Mr. Hargrove gave a sermon on that after the feast. So, and I was really kind of thinking, should I really give this? And the more I thought about it, I kind of liked the story I'm going to tell. So I thought, oh, well, unless I remind them, they won't remember anyway. So I'm just coming clean right at the beginning. Goal setting, important part of life. It's something that we should make a part of our lives. Business people and managers talk about managing by objectives. Now, we get that concept from Peter Drucker, who wrote about it in the 1950s. Most people in business have heard of that. So you have an objective, and you begin from wherever you are, and you start doing things that will accomplish that objective. Many consultants and advisors to companies teach them to establish WIGs, wildly important goals. We have, at our company, spent the last 3 months working on our 2014 WIGs, our goals for next year, which we think are very important, and we're trying to communicate them to the employees, and we're trying to get people involved in them. There is a new concept in establishing goals that appeared a couple years ago, and it said that goals should be SMART goals. SMART in this case being an acronym for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-based. If you didn't get all that, I'll be repeating it here somewhere as we work our way through this sermon. Goal setting actually probably goes back to Adam and Eve. But the modern day work was actually done by a man by the name of Dr. Edwin Locke in the late 1960s. Dr. Locke would be what we would call an industrial psychologist. And he worked around motivation and incentive. And he stated that employees were motivated by clear goals and appropriate feedback. Clear goals and appropriate feedback. And I think that's what most of us really want. We want to know what the objective is, and then we'd like to know, as we're going down the path, how are we doing? How are we doing? One time Arnie and I were babysitting. This was when our kids were little. And we were babysitting this family, and there were three or four of them. Well, the girls, in this case Michelle and her sister Ramona, had gotten into trouble. So one of the little boys said, "How is my family doing?" He didn't want to be next. He just wanted to find out, how are we doing right now? It's hard to find a book written on goal setting that you don't find in it Proverbs 29. If we could turn to Proverbs 29. Actually, Proverbs 29 is rendered in verse 18. It's rendered a couple of different ways, and probably in the Bibles that you have here this afternoon. Some people carry or bring to church what we call the Old King James Version. And in Proverbs 29 and verse 18, in that version it says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." I guess you could say of this verse, "Where there are no goals, people will not accomplish much." Again, this proverb turns up a lot in secular writing on goal setting. The New King James Version has this a little different. It renders this verse this way. It says, "Where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint." And you could say of this version that where there is no leadership, the people will be left to fend for themselves, and the end result will not be good. No goals, no accomplishments. Which generally is true. If you don't plan to do anything, chances are you won't get anything done. So, it is true what they say, whoever they are, that there are many ways to skin a cat. So you could give this sermon in different ways and use different words or different terms to talk about goal setting. What I want to do today is to give the five categories that Dr. Locke actually thought goal setting fit into the best. And that goals need to be clear. You need clarity in goal setting. Goals have to be challenging, and you need commitment. Feedback is important, and task complexity. A goal set and accomplished can be incredibly rewarding and satisfying. Goal setting will work for you regardless of your age. So if you say, well, I'm just too old for that kind of stuff, probably not. I don't think so. Or I'm just too young for setting goals. I mean, that's what people do when they work. No, not true. It's actually good for everybody. So it's good for a person regardless of their age. It will work for individuals. It'll actually work for couples. It'll work for families. It will work for departments. It will work for companies. And it'll work for corporations. So goal setting can actually and should be worked into our lives. Now, Proverbs 13 is an interesting set of verses. It kind of separates people in two broad categories. And I know you cannot always put people in clumps, but this talks about people in the way that they see life in two different areas. In Proverbs 13, and we'll begin reading in the actually, we'll read verse 19. It says here, a desire accomplished is sweet to the soul. There are some people who will set goals, and then when they accomplish them, they just feel great about it. They really feel good because they had a plan, and they set it into motion, and then they accomplished it. And they feel really good about it. So there's one type of person that does that. But the companion of fools will be destroyed. So there are people who live life as it comes to them. They're kind of going along with the wind or the stream. And that's just the way life is. You know, you can't do very much because actually the man has his thumb on you. You know, there's a problem here because somebody else will not let me accomplish the things that I want to accomplish. And there is that type of attitude that people have. And let's be honest with ourselves, there are times that we all kind of feel that kind of way. It just seems like everything is going against me. And you can get into that mode of thinking. But in the long run, it will not help you. We must all learn to push those things aside and begin to change our lives with God's help. And we'll get into that part of it as well. So goal setting principle number one is clarity. A goal has to be clear. One of these days I'm going to clean out my garage is not a goal. Sounds like a goal, but it's actually not a goal when you think about it in a clear way. Now, if you were to say, I'm going to clean out my garage so I can find my tools anytime I need them, and I plan to have this done by the spring of 2014, that's a goal. That can be lived up to. Now, I'm using the garage here, and I know the garage is mostly a man's domain, and I'm going to kind of stick to that because these apply to the kitchen, but I'm not allowed to talk about that part. I know there are drawers in everybody's kitchen that you can't tell what's in there because, you got to go in there in faith because you know that's where you put it because you can't see it. And you open up a door under the sink, and it's crazy in there. It gives you the willies to look at it. I know this, but again, I've been told that I don't have any dominion in that part of the house. So I'm just going to stick with the garage here this afternoon, if you don't mind. So here we have a person that's going to clean their garage, and they have a clear goal. Now, it is a goal. It could be measured. And now, since this is a sermon and not actually a business seminar, I know up to this point you may not have been able to tell the difference. Let's see if we can apply these principles to the scriptures. And let's go to a favorite book of mine, Romans. Romans, the 15th chapter. And we find the Apostle Paul actually sharing with some people in Rome his plans with them. Romans 15. We're going to start reading in verse 22. This was written from Corinth. The Apostle Paul says, I have been much hindered from coming to you, but now no longer having a place in these parts and having a great desire these many years to come to you, whenever I journey to Spain, I shall come to you. So the Apostle Paul had done pretty much all he was going to be able to do in what we call Turkey today in Greece, that part of the world. All the major cities he had gone to. He had preached the gospel of Jesus Christ, starting with the Jews first, and then to the Gentiles in that part of the world. It was said in Jerusalem that the Apostle Paul had turned the world upside down, and he had made a tremendous dent in paganism of that time, people coming to know the God of Israel. In verse 24, it says, For I hope to see you on my journey and to be helped on my way there by you, if first I may enjoy your company for a while. But now I'm going to Jerusalem to minister to the saints, for it had pleased those of Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor saints that are at Jerusalem. For it pleased them indeed, for they are debtors. For the Gentiles have been partaker of their spiritual things. Their duty is also to minister to them in material things. So the knowledge of Jesus Christ had come out of Judea. So a spiritual blessing to the Gentiles. And the Gentiles said, the people in Jerusalem are poor, and therefore let's help them in physical things. In verse 28, Therefore, when I have performed this, and have sealed to them this fruit, I shall go by way of you to Spain. I'm coming to see you on my way to Spain. In verse 29, I know that when I come to you, I will come in the fullness and the blessing of the gospel of Christ. So there were people there that knew and understood about Jesus Christ. They had come from Jerusalem. They had come from the other parts of the Roman world. And he says in verse 30, I beg you, brethren, through the Lord Jesus Christ and through the love of the Spirit, that you strive together with me in your prayers to God for me. So he's trying to bring them in to his goal. He's trying to bring them in to the things he's trying to accomplish, that I may be delivered from those in Judea who do not believe, and that my service for Jerusalem may be acceptable to the saints, and that I may come to you with joy by the will of God and may be refreshed together with you. Now, the God of peace be with you. Amen. So here we have the Apostle Paul has a goal. He's sharing it with others. Paul now is in his mid-50s. He has 10 years to live. This is in 1958. This is in 58 A.D., and he will die in 68 A.D. He'll actually be in Roman prison twice. We're just going to go up to the first time that he was in prison. If you don't have clear plans, you can just go through life and let things happen in a freestyle manner, taking it as it comes, living life on the wind, and hoping for the best. Most of the time when you do that, you won't have much to show for your efforts. So you must have a clear goal, and principle number two is that it must have some challenge. Goals without challenge are of not much value. I'm going to get up tomorrow morning is not a challenging goal, unless you've been sick for a couple days, and then perhaps maybe it would qualify. But I'm just going to get up in the morning, or I'm going to get up tomorrow, depending on how late you sleep, may not be a challenging goal. Now, when you think of challenge, you also think of reward. It helps if you build into your goal setting a reward system. The reward of cleaning out your garage so you'll be able to find your tools may not work for everybody just from the standpoint of a desired accomplished. So some people are goal-oriented, so getting the garage cleaned out and enjoying that feeling of accomplishment will be a great reward. But if you're not that type of person, when you set your goals, you may have to build in some other reward, something else that will help you celebrate your accomplishment. How many are bike riders in the serious bike riders? You know, 25, 30, 50 miles, something like that. Arnie and I used to ride when we were younger. And so we would go out on bike rides, and sometimes it's just miserable riding a bike, you know, at 10 speed. You have that little narrow seat, and you're hunched over, and, you know, and you got people that you're trying to keep up with because you don't want to look totally stupid, you know, way back and away back. So anyway, what motivates most bike riders is the treat. You know, you'll stop somewhere along the way for ice cream. You know, you can justify it because you've burned a lot of calories. And so the treat was always a driving force in riding in our bike rides. So you may not just feel that overwhelming, feel good, pumped up when you accomplish something. You may have to build in to who you are some sort of reward, an ice cream or some other treat. So setting goals can be important to life. Now, I mentioned before about setting SMART goals, meaning that goals were specific, that they were measurable, they were obtainable, that they were relevant, they were important to what you were doing, and that they were time-based. You know, I'm going to do this one of these days is just not a goal. A lot of us are just going to do some things one of these days. And we say that year in and year out, and we just never seem to get there. Paul had a goal to go to Rome. What were the challenges? What were the rewards? The book of Acts tell us that the challenges that Paul faced was getting in and out of Judea. There were people in Jerusalem that wanted to kill him. They thought the best kind of Paul was a dead Paul. And they were willing to actually put their lives on the line to kill him. So for a reward for why the Apostle Paul wanted to go to Rome, we really need to go to Romans Romans 1. Let's go to Romans 1 and see about the Apostle Paul and his thoughts about going to Rome. We'll begin reading in verse 11. He says, I long to see you, that I may impart to you some spiritual gift, so that you may be established. So this would say that Peter had not been to Rome, that Peter had not really set the church up at Rome. Rome had people that believed. They counted themselves Christians. We're going to touch base with some of them at the end of this sermon. But he wanted to go there. Paul was the foremost authority at this time on how that the knowledge of Jesus Christ actually integrated into the Old Testament, what we call the Old Testament. And so he understood with incredible clarity what God was doing and what Christ meant to the Jews first and also to the Gentiles. And he had shared this over Greece and Turkey and the northern part north of Israel into what we would call Syria today and into Lebanon. But he wanted to go to Rome. He said in verse 12 that we may be encouraged together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. So he's not only going there to give, but he wants to go there and share in the fellowship. He wants to know how it is to be a Christian living at the seat of the Roman Empire. So he wants to be refreshed with them and by them. Verse 13, I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that I have often planned to come to you, but have been hindered until now, that I may have some fruit among you also as the other Gentiles. So he had taught the Gentiles in the known world, and he wanted to go to Rome and also to Spain. So many times in goal setting, it helps to share your plan with others. This will do two things. One, it will make you work harder to complete the goal. Otherwise, you're going to have to share your failure with all the people you told that you were going to do this or that. And trust me, this can be motivating because you don't want somebody to say, well, how's that garage clean out coming? How you doing when you haven't even started? So it can be a source of motivation. So otherwise, you're going to have to explain it to people. And the second reason, it may help by sharing your goals with others because they may be able to help you. They may see some racking system and say, hey, if you put this in the garage, it ought to really be able to help you find those tools. Or maybe they'll just drop by some afternoon and help you with the great project. If you share your goals with others, they may be able to provide some assistance along the way. The Apostle Paul shared his vision, his goals, with the Romans because he wanted them to pray for him. He wanted to be successful in his attaining his goal, and so he asked them to get God involved. So these are not new ideas. Mankind has been thinking about making plans and dreams and visions, like I said earlier, since Adam and Eve, since the beginning of time. Because goal setting is kind of like being human in many ways. Let's go to the book of Habakkuk. We rarely go to Habakkuk. You probably can't find it. It's after Amos and it's after Micah. So it can be found. It's right back there after Daniel. God here is talking about making a vision. writing something down. So Habakkuk 2, in verse 2, it says, "The Lord said, write the vision and make it plain on tablets, that he may run who reads it." So this was a prophecy for the future, but it was also kind of a plan, a goal. And God wanted it plain, and he wanted it written down. The vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it. And this is what we're doing. We're waiting for Jesus Christ to return. The prophecies of the Old Testament, they're going to happen. And so here God is telling Habakkuk to make a plan. Write it down. Because it will surely come. It will not tarry. In verse 4, we read this verse sometime, and it's actually quoted a couple times in the New Testament. "Behold the proud, his soul is not upright in him." So there's the one type of person. "But the just shall live by his faith." And sometimes goal setting is like that as well. Goal setting is about putting something out in the future, and by faith you start moving towards it. You start trying to accomplish the things that need to be done in order to get the goal accomplished. So a goal has to have challenge. This will make it meaningful when it's completed. And for those of us who make God an active part of our lives, which I would hope would be everyone here, then it's good to pull God into those plans. Make God a part of your commitments, your challenge, and ask him for help, just as the Apostle Paul did. So principle number 3 in goal setting is commitment. You have to be committed to the goals that you set. Goals have to be clear, they have to be challenging, and you must have commitment. If others are involved, they need to understand the goal, and they need to agree to their part. If your mate or your friend is a part of the great garage cleanup, they need to be kept up to speed. They need to be informed about the plan, the progress. Good goals are written down. They are also shared with others. Tell your friends, by the spring of 2014, I'm going to have my garage so clean that I can walk out there anytime and pick up anything I need to do work around the house. Tell it to a lot of people because it will be a source of motivation later when some distraction will come. And you've got to think about this. No matter what your goal is, there will be distractions along the way. There's going to be things that are going to sidetrack you. And so, therefore, you have to think about this in the very beginning, that there are going to be distractions, and you've got to have a source of motivation that's going to help you push your way through those distractions. How about the Apostle Paul's example? He wrote his goal down. He shared it with others. There is no doubt about his commitment, and he asked the people at Rome to get involved in his goal. Let's go to Psalms 37. Psalms 37. So this is about getting God involved in our goal setting. In verse 4, it says, "Delight yourself also in the Lord." That, you know, when you think about delight, you know, there's some things that are just really fun. You know, some things you just, you know, when you get a chance to participate in them, it's just great. You know, we're going to go to ball game, or we're going to go to the feast, or we're going to go to the winter family weekend. There are just some things you just delight in. They feel good emotionally. They feel good physically because you're going to be around people that you are looking forward to. There's just some things you delight in. So think about that. Delight yourself also in the Lord. And the way you do that is that you get God involved in your life. You begin to share with Him everything. This is what I want to do. Here are the obstacles that I'm having. Here are the distractions that I'm facing. Here's the problems that I'm incurring here. Delighting yourself in God, getting Him down into the nitty-gritty, down into the dirt of the problem. Delighting yourself in God. And He may give you the desires of your heart. That God will be on your side. Well, He'll be involved in the great garage cleanup. Yes, we're going to get that garage cleaned by the spring of 2014. Can't talk about the kitchen, but you can talk about the garage. People have their domain. I will get mine later. So you can get God involved in what you're doing. Principle number 4 in goal setting is feedback. Feedback. How does feedback fit in here? Feedback provides the opportunity to clarify expectations as you're talking to people about what you're doing, listening to their ideas. It'll also help you gain recognition of accomplishments up to that point. It is important to have benchmarks of achievement along the way. You know, it feels really good. Back to the bike riding thing. You know, we're 5 miles out, and it's a 20-mile ride. It's always good to have benchmarks along the way. Targets will help motivate you. You know, if you know you're halfway there, wow, I always think of halfway there, where you're, you know, it's always easier on the downside. At least I always think of that. You go up the hill, it's always easier to go back down the other side. So once you get into it, usually, I found most of the time, it's getting started is the problem. It's almost like you see a truck that's got a big load on it, and, you know, it starts out really slow and just grunts and groans. And I think that's true in most goal setting. Most things that we want to accomplish in life, it's really tough just getting started, getting it rolling. Because once you do, then it seems like it's a little easier. So if you talk to others about it, share with them, then in the process, you will be motivated. And then other people will try to encourage you. So, you say I'm about a third along, and I've got two-thirds to go, and, you know, that can be something that would drive yourself. And so in this process, you could also break things down in chunks. You know, sometimes doing this is just overwhelming. I just can't do all that. But maybe I could do it in 4 chunks. I could do this. I can get there. And then I can get here. And then I can get here. Sometimes you have to chunk it up in order to get all the way through a project. And then when you chunk it up, you can actually enjoy the successes along the way because it will be an accomplishment. Now, again, if you're not motivated by being able to chalk one up for the good guys, then you may need to actually build some other reward system into your goal setting. Now, if you set a goal here in December to clean out the garage by the spring of 2014 and waiting until the end of February sometime to start, that may not be in good faith. So you really, when you set a goal, you need to get on it. As we remember the Apostle Paul, we find that he broke his goals into segments. He's going to go to Jerusalem. Then his goal was to go to Spain, but he was going to go to Rome on the way to accomplishing his goal. And the people in Rome were actually tracking his progress. They knew where he was. Let's go to Luke 14. Luke 14 is really interesting when you think about goal setting. Most of us read Luke 14 when we were planning to be baptized, because most of the time it's in the counseling sessions. So if we can maybe not think about this in a spiritual sense here this afternoon, excuse me. In verse 28 it says, "Which of you, intending to build a tower, does not set down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it?" This is really important in goal setting. And whoever baptized you, or if you're a young person and you're thinking about eventually coming into the church, this is something you should think about, because it's a lifetime commitment. And whoever counsels you for baptism, they'll talk to you about this. But we all thought about this, but think about this in the physical sense. You got this big project. You're going to build a tower. Wow. So you have to set down and you have to count the cost. You have to think about what you're going to need. What resources do you have, and what resources are you going to have in order to accomplish this? Lest, after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all who see it begin to mock him, and saying, "This man began to build a tower and was not able to finish it." If he'd have been able to finish it, it was going to be a monument to his success. He'd set a goal and he'd accomplished it. It was a monument. But now he just had the foundation, and now it's a monument to his failure. He did not accomplish his goal. He failed. So when you think about this and you start sharing things with others, "Well, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that." Well, this is why it's important you think it out. Because your lack of success could now become a mark of your failure. So it's something to think about. It shouldn't keep you from goal setting, because if you don't set goals, then you're probably not going to accomplish very much. Again, age doesn't count here. Life counts. If you're alive, you should be pushing forward, because that's what God wants of us. He wants us to be about our Father's business until we die. That's why this is important at baptism, a long-term commitment. Let's go to Philippians 4. Philippians 4. I want to read this because this kind of shows who the Apostle Paul was. We're going to read, Philippians 3. Philippians 3, and we'll begin reading in verse 12. He says, "Not that I have already obtained or am already perfected." So you think about who the Apostle Paul was and how driven he was. Here in this point, he didn't think of himself as already have made it. So we already said it, he's in his mid-50s. His life is close to being over. I forget exactly when Philippians was written, whether it was written in his late 50s or early 60s. But he said, I don't think I've already made it, but I press on that I may lay hold of that which Christ Jesus also laid hold of me. Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forward to those things which are ahead, I press towards the goal for the prize, for the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. I wanted to read this because look at the action words of this man. Reaching, press, upward, ahead. It shows his effort to hitting the goals that he set for himself personally. He wanted to lay hold. I press on. I press forward. So we have to have a commitment to the goals that we set for ourselves. I talked about the tower and the complexity. Principle number 5 is task complexity. Sometimes your goals are going to be complicated and therefore have to be thought out. Luke 14 is just a perfect lead-in to this part of talking about goal setting. Big projects need to have detailed plans. Timelines need to be realistic. Again, benchmarking is important. The goal must be obtainable. Cleaning out the garage may be a worthwhile project, and it will provide many dividends if you clean it and then you maintain it by keeping it clean. I think I spoke a couple years ago about the Japanese concept of the 5 S's of sorting and straightening and shining and standardizing and sustaining. Obviously, you've forgotten about that, so I'm going to get to give that again sometime. It is a vital part of being a Christian to live our lives that way as well. So how did Paul do in his goal? Well, we all know he got to Rome, so you've read ahead, or you know ahead. Let's think about it from what we've covered. Was there clarity in his goal? I think so. Was there a challenge? Well, you bet. There were people that wanted to kill him to keep him from leaving Jerusalem. Never doubt his commitment. Feedback? Obviously, there was feedback. There were people that actually tried to discourage him along the way to Jerusalem, but he kept pushing forward. And did it have task complexity? Yes, it did. Was it a SMART goal? Was it specific? Was it measurable, obtainable, relevant, and time-based? I think it would qualify for all those. Dr. Locke would be very happy. He'd be very happy with the Apostle Paul's goal because it hit all the benchmarks. Now, Paul had to make some adjustments along the way. And you'll find this is true in most goal setting. You state, I'm going to have the garage cleaned out by the spring of 2014. And then something happens. You know, you pick up the phone and you've won a trip to Hawaii or something like that. And you know you're not going to finish the garage. You're going to Hawaii. No problem. Go. And then when you come back, get back into the garage. I always think about it as like falling off the wagon. You know, they always talk about falling off the wagon. And sometime in life, you just fall off the wagon. You know, you're not paying attention or whatever. You were there on the wagon, and now you're on the dirt. Now you got to run to catch up. Got to get back on the wagon. So That's important in goal setting, because there are going to be things are going to happen. There's going to be failure along the way, but you have to readjust and keep moving in the right direction. So let's go to Acts 28. Acts 28, and we're going to see the Apostle Paul finish up his goal here. Actually, we want to go to Acts 27. Acts 27, and we'll begin reading in verse 42. I'll just tell you about what went before. There were 276 people on this ship that the Apostle Paul was on. He told them earlier they had gone by Fair Haven, one of the islands in the Mediterranean. He says, we need to winter here. But the captain and the owner said, no, we're going to press on. Well, the Apostle Paul said, I fear for our very lives and the ship and its cargo. Where we're going to pick up the story, the cargo is gone. They've had to throw that overboard. The ship is coming up on an island called Malta. If you think of Italy, the boot, Sicily, down under Sicily is a little island called Malta. They were coming up on it. They hadn't eaten for days. They were fighting incredible rough storms. And so they saw land, and they were going to try to beach the ship. But in the process of coming up on the island, they were caught in the waves, which the waves were working their way around the island, and the ship couldn't sustain itself. And it began to be beat back and forth. And it broke up. In verse 42, it says here that the soldiers had a plan. They were going to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. The Apostle Paul had built a relationship, but this time with Julian, who was his centurion watching him. But the centurion wanted to save the Apostle Paul. And so he commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and to get to land. In verse 44, and the rest of them, some of them on boards and some of them on broken pieces of the ship, they were able to get to this island. It's cold. It's raining. And now they had escaped, and they found out that the island was named Malta. Now, I think all of us have just a tremendous respect for the Apostle Paul. I like verse 3 because it talks about the kind of man that the Apostle Paul was. He was a great man. The centurion respected him at this point, knew who he was and what he was. And you would think that he'd be huddled over by the fire, sitting at one of the chief seats around the fire. But in verse 3, when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, the viper came out because of the heat and fastened onto his hand. So the Apostle Paul was not hunkered up by the fire. Here is a man who is a worker, goal-driven. And so he goes over. He's getting the wood for the fire. Quite an individual. We want to go down to verse 11. It says, after 3 months, and they'd made some friends along the way here, and after 3 months they sailed on an Alexandrian ship whose figurehead was the twin brothers, which was a couple of idols up on the masthead. And so they sailed in between Sicily and Italy, and got up along the western coast of Italy, and they got to the dock. There was a road that came out of Rome called the Appian Way, And so they docked. And here is just a great thing I think of. I think of the Church of God here and the kind of people that we've been down through the ages. In verse 14, and they found brethren, and they were invited to stay with them for 7 days, and so they went towards Rome. And from there, when they, I don't want to read all this. It says, and when the brethren heard about us, they came and met us as far as Appii Forum in the Three Inns. And when Paul saw them, he thanked God and took courage. Verse 15. So this is kind of like the church in so many ways. You know, somebody's coming to Cincinnati, and then we'd like to just go down there and hear them for the services. You know, we'll load up in the car and drive down 100 miles because we're going to see some people along the way, and maybe afterwards we'll have dinner. I mean, we've all done crazy stuff like this. Now, the Appii Forum was 43 miles from Rome. They didn't have cars. 43 miles by foot is a long ways. You know, what do you walk, maybe 3 miles an hour? So, how many hours can you walk? 12? Could you walk 12 hours? That'd be 36 miles. You'd have to lay up that night in order to get down to Appii Way or Appii Forum. The three taverns were 33 miles. And so the Apostle Paul met there the people that he had told about his coming, the people that were praying for him, the people that he had shared his goal with were there. They were supporting him. The Apostle Paul made some adjustments along the way, but he made his goal. Hope you accomplish all yours.